This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Just you and me forever.
Do you take this woman as your lawful wedded wife?
Ooh, yeah!
Oh, no.
Place the ring on her finger and repeat after me. With this ring, I thee wed.
And hello, Place to Be Nation, and welcome to the 12th edition of With This Ring. I'm your host, Ryan Everett, along with...
I'm your host, Cindy Everett.
Yep.
And everyone's
very well. Hello. It's all right. It's fine. And today we will be going over we continue to go through the greatest WCW Jim Crockett Promotions greatest TV matches ever. And today we will be looking at quite the opposite of the Jim Crockett Promotion matches that we looked at last time, is we will be looking at just matches from WCW Monday Nitro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, different production value for sure.
Yes, that is for sure. Totally different thing. So, Nitro, to give a little background.
Yeah, what do you mean it was different? This was all in the WCW universe.
Right, so this was all on the WCW universe. This was after it was owned by Turner for about 5 years at this point.
Okay.
And this was, Eric Bischoff was running the company at this point after various different heads had come in and tried to run it and basically failed because either they... didn't know how to run a wrestling promotion, or they didn't know how to run a wrestling promotion within a company.
Gotcha.
That was, you know, within a bigger corporate.
A conglomerate, yeah.
Yeah. So, and Eric Bischoff tells a story that in 1995, he made a big deal, syndication deal, for WCW to be broadcast. At the time, WCW had three weekend shows on TBS. Like a Saturday morning show. A Saturday afternoon show that was like their main flagship, and then a Sunday evening show. The problem with the two afternoon shows, though, were the Atlanta Braves were always on TBS, so during the summer, a lot of times it was cut down to an hour or just preempted straight up. So
gotcha.
They wanted to get something a little more permanent.
Mm-hmm.
But before he even thought of that, he got a big deal to do syndication in China.
Oh.
To get it there. The only problem with this was the company that he was doing it through was owned by Rupert Murdoch, the head of Fox.
Yep.
And Ted Turner and Rupert Murdoch hate each other.
Really?
It goes back to, like, as two rich guys would, it goes back to, like, a yacht racing competition they had in, like, the late 70s.
Very relatable.
So, yes, of course, something that everyone can relate to. So to get this deal passed, he couldn't just pass it through, like, the Turner Sports... like boss that was his actual boss. He had to go to and meet Ted Turner himself to pitch it. So he got ready to have his second meeting ever with Ted Turner. He got all these presentations set up. And as soon as he walked in, Ted Turner said, "Eric, what do we got to do to compete with Vince?"
Oh.
Meaning Vince McMahon, because Ted Turner and Vince McMahon didn't like each other from long ago.
That didn't surprise me either.
And... Eric Bischoff had no idea this was coming, so he said, "Give me 2 hours on Monday night."
Oh.
So Ted Turner turned around and said to whoever the underling was, "Give Eric an hour to start." And Nitro was an hour to start on Mondays on TNT.
Oh.
Which at the time, I don't know if you remember this, TNT and TBS, they were like both available on cable companies.
Right.
But TNT was like the more prestigious company.
Was it?
At the time, back in 1995.
TNT, I just remember like basketball games.
Well, yeah, that was the thing. It had, TNT was the sports.
It had Seinfeld reruns.
Well, yeah, they didn't have them in 1995.
Not reruns, I guess.
Yeah.
Good point.
1995, they didn't. But TBS was always like kind of like, they'd have the Braves games, they'd have Andy Griffin shows.
I never watched that.
Saved by the Bell.
Oh, definitely.
Those were like the shows on TBS. TNT was like, they'd have NBA basketball.
Like movies, right?
Movies, yeah. And like made for TV. Like, they'd have like Gettysburg like that they made and stuff. So it was kind of like the bigger high end. So and like they had TBS had did wrestling for 20 years and TNT had never had wrestling. So this was like a big deal. Like we're getting serious. So the first thing they did was they decided that they were going to run live every week. Which at the time, Raw was live 1 week out of four.
Okay.
So it was going to be totally different in that respect. And they got Steve McMichael to be their announcer.
Really used him a lot.
He comes up very big in our history, in our podcast, and just in WCW kind of in general. Well, he was a big player for the Bears, so he was big in Chicago. Yeah, I know. But anyways, it was a big deal that they got him because it gave him like a legitimate type of air.
Okay.
So the very first show we watched was November 4th.
So whose idea was it to start it in the Mall of America?
Eric Bischoff. He wanted to like make a big splash, not just be in a, you know, staged arena that you could see any week. This was actually... Raw this week was their annual preemption due to the U.S. Open.
Golf or tennis?
The golf, or tennis.
Oh, okay.
Every year it was preempted around Labor Day.
Gotcha.
Because of the U.S. Open. So they were going unopposed, so they had the whole wrestling audience.
Did they do a lot of promo to hype it up?
Yeah, they did. And then also, not so much on the first, but the next show, they opened with Eric Bischoff reads off the results for Raw, because it was taped. So they were going pretty hard.
Yeah.
To start.
I'm sure Vince didn't like that.
No, he did not. That was part of a big feud for the next coming years.
Okay.
So the very first match in Nitro history.
Coleman versus Jushin Liger.
Thunder Liger, yes.
Thunder Liger.
Yeah. So it's Brian Pillman and Jushin Liger, and they were cruiserweights at the time. Brian Pillman graduated from the cruiserweight ranks and was kind of like a mid-card guy.
Okay.
Jushin Liger just came in every once in a while from Japan.
And cruiserweight refers to how much they weigh, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's still referred to like the minor leagues kind of, or like not as prestigious?
In a way it did. It's not really supposed to.
Right.
It's supposed to be like these are just like the guys. It's supposed to be like,
yeah, like wrestling. Like boxing. Or boxing, that's it. Sorry.
Yeah.
I meant like high school wrestling, not like this wrestling.
Right, no, but yeah, it's supposed to be like boxing. In a boxing that's sense, right. Like these are the best guys at their weight. You know, yeah, they can't compete with the Big Show, but the Big Show wouldn't be able to compete with them at the same time. Like,
right, the Big Show kind of sucks.
Well, that's another discussion that we could have a whole podcast on.
No, thanks.
I disagree with you very much on that.
Oh, whatever.
What? Oh, yeah. But anyways.
His acting career or his wrestling?
He's got a series on Netflix.
We talked about that.
It's pretty bad, I've heard. But anyways, so Brian Pillman versus Jushin Liger, the first match on Nitro, live from the Mall of America.
Yeah.
What did you think of this?
I thought they were good. They're both athletic. There's some good moves off the ropes.
Yeah.
They're jumping all around.
It was
definitely gimmicky. Are. And I think that kind of, I wrote that down for a couple comments. Maybe I'm thinking more last week with like the dog collar match, but there was a lot of gimmicky stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely...
Open in all America.
Yeah, it's kind of like... So they only had three matches on the first Nitro. It was this, it was Ric Flair versus Sting.
Oh, okay.
And then it was Hulk Hogan versus Big Bubba Rogers, who's also a Big Boss Man. So they kind of had three matches that were like totally different in style, each one. Kind of just to show like, okay, here's like our super athletic guys... Which WCW had, like, both of these two guys were better wrestlers than pretty much anyone in WWF at the time.
Oh, okay.
Like, no one could really match them just skills move for wise. Move.
Okay. This is, like, their resume. It's like,
yeah.
Like a little bit
it's kind of like, and then, like, the next match was Ric Flair versus Sting. It was like, here are the two, like, tentpoles of our company.
Yeah.
And then the final match was Hulk Hogan. It was like, here... is for anyone that, you know, if you were a fan of WWF in the late 80s, early 90s,
gotcha.
Here's your template Hulk Hogan match, you know.
Right.
Where he takes a beating, he comes back, he gets the big boot, leg drop, and wins.
Okay. So we didn't watch that one?
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, it's fine, but.
What about the Ric Flair Sting one from the first one?
It's good. It's actually better than the one that we do watch eventually, but it's just kind of like Lex, like Ric Flair and Lex and Sting, it's kind of like they always have like a baseline.
Gotcha.
And they're kind of like just right there, because the big thing in that really isn't the match itself. During the very beginning of the match, Lex Luger walks out.
Ooh.
And is just happens to be in the Mall of America.
Sure.
And 2 days earlier, he was in WWF.
Oh.
And WWF had failed to acknowledge that his contract was up. So he showing up there was a total surprise.
Oh, wow.
Like, I mean, like, obviously, Eric Bischoff made a deal with him.
Right.
But, like,
It wasn't announced,
and like WWF wasn't expecting it, so
wow.
It was quite the surprise draw.
Twist.
So that's why we didn't watch that match, though, because it's probably about an equal, and I'd say the Pillman-Liger match is a little better in quality, and the surprise wouldn't hit you as much as it would have.
Right,
that's as it hit 9-year-old Ryan in 1995.
You were excited.
I was just confused. I didn't know what was going on. I mean, for one thing, as usual, every September there's tennis during my wrestling time. I know you would be happy with that. You were probably watching it.
I probably was, actually. So, what's the guy's name? Brian Coleman?
Brian Pillman.
Pillman. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all. No, he's fine. He's dead. Not going to offend him.
Jeez.
Well, you didn't kill him. He died 2 years later.
Oh, 2 years later? What happened?
Well, he went to WWF, and so early in 96, him and Bischoff came to a deal like where he was going to do this loose cannon bit where like he was going off script all the time. So then they did a thing where he went off script so much that he demanded his release from the WCW.
Okay.
And Eric Bischoff was like, yeah, this is great. So he did that, and he actually got a release because he went to lawyers from WCW who didn't know it was at all an angle.
Oh, no.
And that's the problem. Like, if you did that in WWF, Vince McMahon is, like, the lawyer. So he wouldn't... He would have been like, obviously, we're not going to a real release.
Right.
So they did that, and then right before he signed a big-time deal with WCW, he had a horrible Humvee crash, destroyed his ankle. And WCW's contract, they were like, maybe we shouldn't offer him this anyways. And WWF came up and offered him, like, the same contract.
Gotcha.
So then he came to WWF, had a feud with Steve Austin.
Hmm.
There's an angle on Raw where Austin broke his ankle. And then, because he was still injured.
Right.
And then Austin tried to come crash into his house, and Pillman pulled a gun on him and started shooting at him.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That turned.
Yeah, well, it was the attitude era, they say. Okay. The beginning of it, really. And then he came back, like, in June of 97, but he could not wrestle like he used to, because his ankle was, like, fused in four places. And that started a steady diet of painkillers.
Oh.
And then by October, he was found dead in his hotel. But they said it was, like, an enlarged heart, but it was basically due to painkillers.
Yes. Was addicted to opioids.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. It was a pretty sad story. Mm-hmm. Beginning of the end of the Hart Foundation, unfortunately. He was part of that whole group, and then.
Okay. Well, yeah, this is getting dark.
Dark pretty quick, and it's not going to get better with our next match.
No, it's not.
But our next match.
Oh, wait. I did find a fun fact about the Mall of America. How many parking spots do you think it has?
I went there in 2010. I would say 5,000.
Oh, much higher.
Oh, 25,000.
Okay. I'll just tell you. Almost 12,287.
Okay. Well, the thing is, though, they have their metro rail or whatever their mass transit. It goes right there.
Okay, well.
Because it's not really in Minneapolis proper. Right? It's like just a suburb.
Yeah.
Because whatever their mass transit is, it ends there.
The Metrodome? No, that's... Nope.
That's their old stadium.
That's okay. Yeah, so that wasn't a lot of fun facts, actually, surprisingly. Yeah. I thought that was...
Jingle All the Way? Was it actually filmed there, do you know?
I don't know. I didn't look at that. Guessing not. Speaking of Big Show.
Yes. Yes.
All right, so the next match was a little... I don't know. A lot of these matches are really disorganized. They're like...
So we go
chaotic.
Lex Luger, Sting, and Randy Savage the defenders of WCW against the NWO a couple weeks earlier, mm-hmm. versus Ric Flair, Chris Benoit, and Steve McMichael, three yep. of the Four Horsemen, from July 29th, 1996, at the MGM Studios.
Yes.
The Walt Disney World.
Yeah, nice outdoor match. Yes. At Disney World. They're big, yeah, once again, gimmicky. They're kind of yeah. big on the, you know, places being like.
Well, the thing there was like, so 1996, the Olympics were in Atlanta, obviously.
Right.
So the problem was like almost all of WCW's camera operators and like all the production people were from Atlanta and they were hired for the Olympics.
Oh.
So for 5 weeks, they went to Orlando. And made deals with WGM or MGM.
Okay.
And had Nitro there for like 5 weeks in a row, so they didn't have to like worry too much about like who are going to be our cameramen and our directors and all that. Yeah, get a little
bit of a temporary home and
yeah,
not get some of your labor done.
And I think for the attendance, what they did was it was just like a live, free show.
Yeah.
But it was probably like MGM probably paid them a base.
Right, yeah, you're not going to lose money on it.
Right, exactly. And, like, production-wise, you don't have to worry about the cost.
Right. Oh, this was kind of an interesting, considering what happens in this match, it's interesting it was outside and, like, not
yeah.
in an arena.
Right, I think that's why they did what they did.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's, like, I actually watched this a couple months ago, like, getting ready for the project, and I thought it was, like, a two-minute match, and then it just... But no, it's like a 15-minute
yeah.
match, back and forth, great six-man action. It starts actually early, even with like Randy Savage going crazy and trying
yeah.
to kill Ric Flair because he has Miss Elizabeth with him and a woman, adding to the death rate of our show.
Oh, yeah, quickly.
It's very high in this.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, so let's just cut the conversation off.
The match.
Tell me more about Steve McMichael.
Okay, so
did
he was
wrestle because like he was kind of wrestling and
yeah. Well, this was literally like his third match ever.
Okay,
because he had the match at Great American Bash, which we watched.
Right, right.
And then he had like one or two tag matches before this, and then this was like the next one. It was just they were just kind of establishing him, like he's a powerhouse
okay.
and a personality. Yeah, and it, like he comes in and he'll hit like a big blow to the back of Lex Luger, and then he'll tag out.
Gotcha.
So what they were trying to do to, like, invest in him, just put him with Ric Flair, Chris Benoit, and Arn Anderson for, like, the plan was probably, like, 6 months. And if he's going to learn anything, he'll learn it with those three guys, being a tag team partner with those guys. So that's really what they did for first, like, 6 months of his career. He was only in tag matches with those guys where he's not going to have to wrestle
right, like
a 20-minute match.
Himself,
yeah.
Did he want to be a wrestler? Like, how does
he
even start?
Like, he actually, his first appearance was in WWF.
Oh, okay.
Because in 95, Lawrence Taylor was in the main event of WrestleMania against Bam Bam Bigelow, and he had his team of all pros with him. And Steve McMichael was one of them, and he was the guy who, like, a lot of them just showed up at WrestleMania and were like, whatever.
Right.
He like showed up on Raw 2 weeks before and like got in a pull apart brawl with a guy and like looked like he was ready to go, like this was going to be his next career. And then as soon as he started making overtures with WWF, WCW swooped in, bought him to become a broadcaster, and then decided to switch him to a wrestler.
He's a talented guy.
Yeah.
I saw that.
I mean, he there was a market for him and he exploited it.
Evidently. Still don't really get it. Okay. you could tell me a lot, but
yeah.
I'm not gonna get it.
But then so the match is going back and forth. Sting plays the face in Pearl. He's getting beaten down for a while. And then
face in peril?
Peril. Yeah.
Pearl?
Peril. Whatever. And then all of a sudden, Jimmy Hart comes out and starts screaming at them. And everyone's like, what the hell's going on? And he's saying that everyone's getting beaten up backstage. So all six guys leave the ring.
Yep.
Go backstage. And
which
we see.
It was like, quote unquote, backstage. It was just like behind the
bleachers. It was just behind the bleachers because like they just had a trailer there.
Right. And that's where Rey Mysterio got tossed out of the chair.
Yes. So they go back there. Arn Anderson's on the ground already.
Yeah, that part went on for a little.
Yeah. And then they see Marcus Bagwell and Scotty Riggs were Scotty Riggs gets hit with a gas canister, and he is dead.
Oh, that's right.
He does not move for the next 20 minutes. And then Rey Mysterio comes out of the trailer, jumps off the railing right into Kevin Nash's loving arms, and Kevin Nash just lawn darts him into the side of the stage,
into the side of the trailer. Yeah.
And then the Nash and Hall get into a limo and drive off, and Randy Savage jumps in the roof of the limo and drives away with them.
Obviously.
And then, according to Eric Bischoff, people that were watching in the Orlando area called the police.
Mm-hmm,
so, sure. They had to take a commercial, and during it, production people had to talk to police that showed up.
Oh, really?
Like, for real.
Oh.
Because they thought they were seeing, a gang attack on television.
Oh.
And then, in a funny bit that Cody Rhodes on the WWE DVD about it is talking, and he says that right after, as this was happening, he called his dad, Dusty, who was a booker at the time. He was still a main booker of the show and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they called, and Cody asked about Rey Mysterio, and Dusty Rhodes, to his 10-year-old son, was like, well, I don't know, Cody, it looks pretty bad. They got to put him on the stretcher. I don't know if he's going to make it or not.
Wow.
So, yeah, he was telling his 10-year-old son that Rey Mysterio might be dead.
Wow.
And then, of course...
Still, to say it's kayfabe?
He knew he was fine. He was hurt. He got...
Right.
There's no way to easily take a bump into the side of a trailer, but still.
Right.
He was okay.
Yeah, see, I'm still pretty gullible. I'm like, 10-year-old Cody.
Was he dead?
No, that's pretty bad.
But...
Props to Dusty Rhodes, though, for not even, being real.
Yeah. So then the match itself is about 15 minutes, and then there's about 20 minutes
of the backstage.
But the thing is, I would say the match itself, because at this point Nitro was 2 hours, Raw was 1 hour, and Nitro started an hour earlier.
Gotcha.
So the match probably ended at, let's say 7:55.
Right.
So the backstage was going on, and, the first 10 minutes of backstage was very... compelling. They kept showing guys that were beaten up.
Right.
They kept, Rey Mysterio was saying there's four guys.
Yeah.
And Larry Zbysko thinks that he's speaking Spanish because he keeps saying four.
You're right. Yes. Yes.
But anyway, I remember watching at the time, I'm not switching to a taped British Bulldog versus Savio Vega match.
Is that really what it was?
I don't know. It wasn't anything compelling. I need to change to this right now.
Gotcha.
It was I have to see what is going on here, because they were saying maybe the NWO will show right back up with more guys and more bats.
So
that's why it was so long. It was, and then a really cool thing they did that we didn't watch, but the next match was the Steiner Brothers, and it was supposed to be against the American Males, Bagwell and Scotty Riggs, two guys that were attacked.
Okay. Oh.
So then they just say they bring these two guys out that had never been on Nitro.
Okay.
And they were like, this is just a standby team that we're just having wrestle.
Oh, interesting.
So they make an excuse why the next, three matches are name guys versus no-name guys.
Oh.
It's the name guys got attacked.
And they all got attacked.
So we need to fill something.
Four men with baseball bats.
Yep. Or three men. I don't know what he's saying. He's speaking Spanish.
I mean, the match itself was good.
Yeah.
But then, that kind of overshadowed
it. I think, the historical significance of it.
Oh, historical?
Yeah, I mean, this was very different at the time. It wasn't,
Yeah, no, it's definitely, very soap opera-esque.
Yeah.
All right. I'll give you that. I don't know if historical is the word, but I don't think there's a plaque there for...
Yeah, I'm sure there is on MGM Studios, wherever they hold... I don't know if it's, where the Indiana Jones... studio is, or it's probably part of the Star Wars world, actually.
Like I said, probably it's long gone wherever it was.
Probably where the Millennium Falcon is. So then we jump into the future a year and a half to December 8th, 1997. Rey Mysterio Jr. and Juventud Guerrera versus Psicosis and La Parca. And this is one of the best Lucha Libre tag matches.
Oh, you're going out of order?
No.
You're going chronological.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. Okay. Yeah. So this is the Lucha Libre.
Yeah, and it's kind of
good.
Yeah, it's kind of like Nitro would have a match like this almost every other week.
Oh, okay.
Just like throw all the Lucha Libres out there. This is kind of one of the things that's, it's kind of hard to rate WCW because WWF, like, all the best matches were the biggest matches.
Gotcha.
Where WCW, most of the best matches were, like, these undercard matches.
One-offs.
Without a lot of storyline and just, like, here they are, do a lot of moves and...
Yeah, there was a lot going on in this match. But, you know, Rey Mysterio was his jumpy little active self.
Yep.
And did a lot of good... Yeah, I liked this one.
Yeah, I liked it a lot also, yeah. Yeah, just a really good match. About 10 minutes back and forth. And then in the end, Rey Mysterio, because he's the biggest of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in on the card, not in stature, obviously. Right. But
well, La Parca
the most important. Well, yeah, La Parca is the biggest Lucha Libre, which
they
routinely call out.
Right, right. Yeah, was he actually a good wrestler? Like, what was La Parca?
Yeah, I mean, he was. It was more... Like, he had his best matches more so in Mexico and stuff.
Okay.
But he was just kind of the part of the crew.
Gotcha.
That came up. And he was actually one of them that actually got to get a personality, not just guy who jumps over the ropes.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Have you ever watched any, like, of his Mexican matches?
Kind of. They're kind of... Mexican matches are, like, just different.
Yeah.
A lot. Because, like, tag matches are really different. There's no tags in them. Like, just... Like, if there's two guys on the outside and they want to tag in, they just come in the ring.
Gotcha.
So it's
that's kind of what happens.
It's kind of what ends up happening in these matches, but
right.
It's like the design for those matches.
Gotcha.
And then, so yeah, this was really good. And this is kind of like I said, like the high template of the Lucha Libre. Like, hour one, we have 3 hours. Like, this was when Nitro was getting to almost 3 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was like, yeah.
Jeez.
Every week.
That's a lot of content.
Yes. So the first hour was usually like, no story, just here's some guys wrestling.
Okay.
And then hour two would start with like a promo from the NWO usually.
Gotcha.
And then hour three would be like the big matches.
Lord, that's long.
Yeah. Well, it eventually kind of sunk them.
Right.
Because too much content eventually overexposes everything.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Next, we go to April 20th, 1998 in Colorado Springs. Goldberg versus Raven for the United States title.
Wait a second. We skipped the La Parca versus Randy Savage one.
We got to talk about that one. Yep. No, we did. Yes. Sorry. That was July 9th.
We also skipped the Ric Flair Eddie Guerrero one.
Oh, yep, we sure did.
Okay, this I asked you going chronological. I was like...
So actually, the Ric Flair, Eddie Guerrero one should be our second match. I forgot about that. Second. It was actually before...
Oh, the MGM one?
Yes.
Oh, we'll fix your spreadsheet.
Yep, I gotta... forgot about it.
I didn't really write a lot of notes on the Ric Flair versus Eddie Guerrero one. Just that was in Monroe, Louisiana. In 1996, and that Ric Flair won.
Yep, he wins by Eddie Guerrero passing out in the figure four.
That's right. And
it was surprising because it was kind of like, okay, Ric Flair's going to beat this guy in like 5 minutes. And it actually goes like 18 minutes,
right.
I think.
Yeah, it was a longer one.
Yeah, and it was really establishing Eddie Guerrero as a guy that has to be taken seriously.
Was this his debut in WCW?
No, he'd been around for a while, but he had always kind of been like just at the lower end of the mid-card.
He's a good wrestler, but I feel like I never really watched a lot of his stuff.
Yeah, well, at this point, he still didn't really have, like, a personality. Like, at this point, he was kind of just, like, smiling, like, all right, I'm going to go get him.
Yeah.
And I think he probably says that into the camera as he's coming out, like, I'm going to give it to you, Ric Flair.
He's right. He's related to Vicky.
Yeah, it's his wife.
Oh, okay. Is she around this time?
No. I mean, she was, like, really married to him, but not on camera or anything.
Gotcha, not like a Miss Elizabeth Macho
Man. No. She really didn't start on camera until after he died.
Oh, okay.
And it was kind of like, well, you gotta, like, WWF was like, we'll pay you, but we'll pay you more if you actually become a non-air character.
Gotcha.
Which, I mean, she did, and she was pretty good at it.
Yeah, people Not like her
nope.
points.
Yeah, she.
Like she's a good character.
Right, she was very good at her role, and yeah, I really like this match, and it's actually I added it late because of my feelings for it. Like I thought you would want to see this.
The special match you wanted me to see?
Yep.
Aw. Sorry, I think it must have been tired that night we watched it. I don't have too many notes, but
that's all right.
It being good. I mean, the more we watch it, the more, you know, discerning. Not discerning, but the more I kind of know what to look for and what I like. And
right.
This one was a good one. Some ones we watched, we'll get to the ones on the list that I was with. A lot of them on the
list. Then... Not next, but the next one that we have to review because I skipped over it, unfortunately.
Well, it's a short one. We watched a couple of short
ones. Yeah, we watched a couple of short ones that were more the story and, like, moments in Nitro that I thought should go noticed.
Okay.
Is
yes.
Macho Man Randy Savage versus La Parca.
Quote, La Parca. Who was it, really?
Well, as the match goes on, I mean, it's just a squash match for Randy Savage because... Right. He's facing he's a large Lucha Libre, but come on, he's just a Lucha Libre. He's going to get killed.
Oh, especially La Parca. I mean, the real La Parca would get crushed by Lucha
Libre. Well, I don't know. He's got that chair.
Well, that can do very well.
So, but all of a sudden, Randy Savage hits the pile driver and then, like, preens around and is taunting and goes up for the big elbow drop. And La Parca hits him with a big boot.
Yep.
And then gets up and hits, out of nowhere, hits the diamond cutter.
Gotcha.
And as he's pinning him, it reveals himself to be Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah, people, like, went nuts over this.
Yeah, so this was, like, just such a good shock value that it really popped the crowd. And it really kind of just, it helped. Because, like, the whole of the year of 1997 was the feud between Diamond Dallas Page and Randy Savage.
Oh, okay.
So this kind of, because we saw it, the Great American Bash 97, which was a couple weeks before this, where Scott Hall helped Randy Savage beat him. So this was kind of re-upping him, like being like, he can beat Randy Savage.
Why were Randy Savage and DDP feuding?
Mainly because DDP didn't want to join the NWO, and Randy Savage was NWO, so...
I took it personally,
and then like showed... Playboy pictures of Kimberly, DDP's wife.
Oh.
Like, spray painted NWO. It's kind of like, yeah, she's a good-looking lady, So, you know, Randy Savage doing Randy Savage things.
Women of us always having lots of autonomy.
Of course.
In WCW.
Yeah. Well, this actually let Liz be evil, though, and, like, kind of go after Kimberly. So that was good. At least she wasn't just always standing in the background, not doing anything.
Right.
Just want to quickly take a break out here and talk about all the great things happening at the Place to Be. First of all, check out our new Place to Be Wrestling Network store and show off your favorite podcast logo on great merchandise like t-shirts, hoodies, and more. Just go to www.tpublic.com/user/Place to Be Wrestling Network. On the newest PTB NXT, Tim, Jenny, and Jake continue their tradition of new gimmick names, then cover the very first NXT TakeOver event. On the newest NWA Saturday special, Sean Kidd joins Scott and the Doctor to recap the first episode of UWN Primetime Live, streaming issues and all. Then on the newest ride down the highway to the Impact Zone, Logan and the gang look at the 7th episode of Impact and weekly pay-per-view number 104. On the newest mega episode of NWA Crack and Roll, Sean Callum and the Doctor or with Keith Hughes to recap great Crockett programming from June 1985. The newest episode of Wrestling Chicken Salad, Ben Locke and the guys head back in time to discuss the atrocity that is Fall Brawl 1999. Please rate, review, and subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Just search the Place to Be Wrestling Network. Check out the Place to Be Nation pop feed with some great shows that include The Urine Pop, Laughing Theater, The Great Debate, Diamond Conversation, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of Action, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. Subscribe today. And while you're at it, subscribe to a pair of tremendous podcast feeds. First, Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position is home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and more. And also, check out the new North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It's the official home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Lynne's Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, Shrink Ripped, and more. And if you're listening to With This Ring, you know that we've officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have until New Year's Eve to do research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. On our social media pages, the greatest song from a movie tournament has kicked off, so be sure to vote for your favorites every day. And make sure that you check out theplacetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes, bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Paulie's perspective, Ben's unpopular opinion, and Matt's Disney live action journey. And if you're doing online shopping from Amazon, be sure to click on the banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon. And it takes you right to Amazon and helps PTBN out with no extra cost to you. While you're there, pick up a copy of longtime listener Adrian Cotton's second book, AWO Big Time Players, Episode 2, Continuing to Grow. It's a vivid description of the second episode of the Alpha Wrestling Organization's program, Big Time Players, and it's available on ebook and paperback. You can get both episodes 1 and 2 in paperback form for $15.98. And now back to the show.
And we're back, and we're into the Goldberg section of our Nitro review.
There was a whole Goldberg era.
Yep. The guy deserved it. So the first one was April 20th, 1998. Colorado Springs, him versus Raven for the United States title. Uh-huh. And the United States title was basically the Intercontinental title of WCW. Okay. I don't know if you picked up on that. It's the secondary main title, and Raven won it the night before.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't like he was a long running champ or anything.
I never heard of this guy before.
Yeah.
Raven.
Yeah, his biggest stint was in ECW.
Okay.
So that was where he was like made his biggest name, and then
through ECW matches after this?
I don't know. That might be the next.
Kind of joking, but.
I don't know. That might be the next station, the next project for the place to be. I don't know.
We'll see.
They've done WWF. They've done WCW. We might be going extreme next. But so, anyways, this is U.S. title match for Goldberg. His first title match ever because he's. I think at this point, like 75-0 or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Undefeated.
He was 74-0 and this man was 75-0.
All right. A pretty nice little
streak going.
And it's a nice little landmark victory for 75, the U.S. title. And it's under Raven's rules, which means there are no rules.
Yeah. How did he get his own rules?
So he came in like the summer before he showed up. And it was just sitting in the crowd all the time. And the WCW guy wanted to sign him to a contract because he was a big star. They always were just like, we know you have a reputation from other promotions.
Gotcha.
And he said he would only sign a contract that allowed him to wrestle the way he wanted to wrestle. Mm. So he got Raven rules for all of his matches, which in this match actually ended up hurting him.
Right.
And then his flock runs in. Mm-hmm. And his flock was just
this is bizarre.
Group of like lackeys and
yeah.
including the bald headed gentleman with the stop sign.
Oh,
was
yeah.
Horace. Oh. He had debuted the night before. He actually helped Raven win the title the night before.
Oh, so this guy always had people help him. That's how he won all the time?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he's a heel.
Lame.
Okay,
he's a heel.
He's a heel. What is he supposed to do?
Lame.
And Horace, his full name is actually Horace Hogan. He is Hulk Hogan's nephew.
Really?
Yes.
Hulk Hogan has a nephew named Horace?
Well, I don't think I think his real name's like Mike.
Oh, okay.
But his wrestling name was Horace.
That's a bad wrestling name.
Yeah, well.
It's not a great name in general.
Yeah, well, I mean, he went by Horace Boulder, because Hulk Hogan's original name was Terry Boulder.
Gotcha.
So then, eventually, yeah, he became Horace Hogan in WCW.
Hulk Hogan sounds much better than Terry Boulder.
Yeah, and Terry Bollea.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, they have different sized penises.
Who?
Terry Bollea and Hulk Hogan.
Oh.
That was in the big lawsuit he had with Gawker.
Oh.
They said, like, under oath, he was saying that Hulk Hogan and Terry Bollea have different sized penises.
Under oath. That's a really stupid thing to say.
Yeah, but, I mean, he ended up getting $100 million, so.
Yeah, joke's on us. Jeez.
Hell, I'd say I have two different sized penises if someone gave me $100 million for it.
Yeah, it was on the record.
I'll put it on the record. Put it on any record you want. So, anyways, though, Goldberg dispatches the flock.
Yes.
And then Raven tries to escape through the crowd.
Does not work.
But the fans, they want Goldberg to win this. So sure. They're so driven by Goldberg's, their fandom of Goldberg, that they throw him back into the over the barrier.
I think that would have some well-placed, also local wrestlers.
Yeah, well, actually, I will say this for them, though. They made them look like actual fans.
Right.
And it's not like the cops with ponytails that they usually use. They actually look like they just, I don't know, maybe they actually just got, like before the show, they asked, like, 10 fans and paid them, like, $100 each, like, hey, you want to body surf Raven back into the...
I kind of figured
they were probably
doing a little bit, at least.
Yeah, I mean, or maybe they were just fans that, like, had gotten comp tickets anyways.
Gotcha.
And were there. Because there's, like, two or three of them that just look like fat, schlubby 30-year-olds. Nice.
Yeah.
No. But then Raven hits the big, or sorry, Goldberg hits the spear and jackhammer, and we will see that as a death knell. No one kicks out of that.
Nope.
And then our next match is La Parca versus Goldberg.
Oh, yeah, that was a short one.
Yes, this one doesn't go long.
Oh, what's the...
And then we continue with our Goldberg's Greatest Hits as we go to June 1st, 1998. I did not see this live. I was busy at Raw in the Allstate Arena.
Oh.
Well, the Rosemont Horizon at the time.
Yeah. But, I mean, this match, you would have had to, if you blinked, you would have missed it.
Right, yeah. It goes a whole 31 seconds, and I just included it because it's my guy, La Parca.
Yes, yes. Again, I didn't really think you thought this was one of the greatest matches at WCW.
No.
Maybe for you personally, it's a touchdown.
Yeah, it's a touch. Yeah, it's a personal favorite. La Parca versus Goldberg for the U.S. title. It consists of La Parca hitting Goldberg with his chair and doing a dance.
Yep. And then he gets, what was it?
The spear.
The spear, yeah.
And then the jackhammer.
And then is done.
And that's it.
Yep, just went through the whole match, move
my yep, and I think it was just kind of, you know.
So just, when did you see it first, if you were... not at Raw at the time.
I don't remember if I think I taped the Nitro replay. Because I think I taped, I had my VCR taping Raw that I was at.
Right.
And then Nitro always played a replay at like 10 to 1 at the time on TNT. So I think I taped both of those.
Nice.
Yeah. So I probably watched it Tuesday afternoon. Or Tuesday, I think it was the last week of school, so I think I watched it Tuesday afternoon, probably.
Gotcha. And this match made such an impression on you.
Yes, yeah. Well, La Parca, because, I mean, really, at the time, La Parca was, he's the Mexican guy who dances.
Right.
With a chair.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that was his.
Hey, nice work if you can get it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite part of the whole thing is just... while Goldberg's making his huge entrance,
right,
breathing fire and walking through
being all serious,
fire,
yeah.
They flash to the ring and La Parca's just standing on his chair like an idiot.
Yeah. Did he hit him before the match even started?
I think like he hits him and the bell rings
and then
does his dance and the bell rings maybe again and then it's spear and jackhammer. Officially it's 31 seconds, so.
That's generous.
Yeah. But then we go to July 6th, 1998.
To a real match.
A real match in the Georgia Dome. I think it was 39,000 people.
Oh, people were pumped for this.
Yes. Goldberg versus Hollywood Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And they announced it on, Thunder was WCW's Thursday show. So they announced it then. But then at the beginning of Nitro, Hulk Hogan came out and said he wasn't going to give Goldberg a shot unless he could beat an NWO guy. So okay. At like 8 o'clock, it was Goldberg versus Scott Hall.
Gotcha.
And Goldberg won that, obviously.
Right, yes.
But it was, you know, a big guy to beat. You know, it wasn't like just
scrub, yeah.
Horace Hogan or anything.
Horace Hogan.
So Goldberg won that and then gets to this match. And it is, I mean, it's like WCW's creative peak was probably 1997.
You think?
But this is like their business peak.
Gotcha. Oh, like, okay.
I mean, them and Raw would go back and forth for the next few months in ratings, like who would win each week. But this was like Nitro one-handedly.
Solid Nitro
they
territory.
Had 39,000 people in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And they like had this huge match. And from here it was kind of all. This was the zenith and it's downhill from here.
Gotcha.
And eventually it goes downhill very quickly.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that long before the last match that we
And then to. Also, like, the big thing that came under fire for this eventually was, like, why didn't they do this at a pay-per-view? Because, like, okay, yeah, it got a good rating. They beat Raw that week, but, like, I didn't pay anything for it to watch it.
Right.
I actually watched this Grandma Men's.
Aw.
But I didn't pay anything to watch, you know, she had TNT.
Right.
Watched it then. And, like, if they had pushed it out a month for pay-per-view and actually promoted it, how many people would have actually paid $30 to watch Goldberg versus Hogan?
I'm guessing a lot.
Especially because there was a pay-per-view the next week, and these guys weren't with each other at all. It was Karl Malone and Diamond Dallas Page versus...
Why is Karl Malone involved?
Well, it was Karl Malone and Diamond Dallas Page versus Hulk Hogan and Dennis Rodman. Because Rodman and Karl Malone had been, they just played each other in the finals.
That's right.
Bulls Jazz and.
Mailman doesn't deliver on Sundays.
Yes. Dennis Rodman was correct. He was even correct in wrestling because Hogan and Rodman won the match.
Oh. Spoiler.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to watch it.
I know.
It's in your own free time. It's your own free work assignment.
Exactly. Yeah.
But so it was kind of like. It made sense just because they wanted to have a big show in front of all the Turner executives that would be there in front of 30,000 people in Atlanta, which is their home base. So it's kind of like, it's understandable why they did it, but at the same time, it's like they could have done more with it.
Yeah, and the match itself, this is where these last couple ones I have a little bit of an issue with.
Like, right.
I was just about to like write a note in my app that like, oh, this match is getting boring. And that's when Mr. Perfect, sorry, Kurt Hennig.
Yes. Don't want to get that intellectual property lawsuit from WWE. After
us for that. But yeah, this match was just okay. Like, he hit him with the belt. There wasn't like a lot of like big moves.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a very standard Hulk Hogan match at this
that's
time.
True.
Like, he wasn't doing a lot, but he was doing what he did. Well, he knew would elicit a big reaction.
Right, that's true.
So, I mean, yeah, he might only do 10 moves, but they get a bigger reaction than 20 moves from anyone else would have gotten.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was kind of not, I had a hunch that Goldberg was going to win.
Yeah.
Kind of a hometown favorite.
And then
people start throwing tons of crap into the ring.
And a lot of toilet paper.
That's right.
I think that there was, you know, nowadays you go to a bathroom in the stadium, there's usually. It's locked. But at the time, there must not have been a lock on the toilet paper at the Georgia Dome. But there must have been a supply cabinet open or something.
Right.
There are at least 6 or 7 rolls of toilet paper that come streaming in. And, you know, at Japanese shows, they like to throw, like, the ribbons,
those
streamers in. And instead, here they're just throwing rolls of toilet paper that don't,
stay classy.
They don't quite have the same, like, majestic appearance. But, I mean, there's one that throws it while he is holding Hulk Hogan up for the jackhammer that I've always, like, that's probably my personal favorite WCW moment. The guy whipping this toilet paper into the ring as Goldberg hits the jackhammer. And Bobby Heenan is freaking the hell out.
Well, oh, yeah.
And that's the one good thing about Bobby Heenan through this all. Because it was always kind of hard for him. Because the NWO was a heel group, and he was always supposed to be the heel announcer.
Gotcha.
But he couldn't really, he had to kind of be the face because he couldn't like the NWO. So here he just goes full out cheering for Goldberg because he's against Hulk Hogan. And the one constant in Bobby Heenan's career is that he hates Hulk Hogan.
Well, it's good to be consistent on one thing.
Yeah, right? So that kind of works for him here where he's freaking out about Goldberg winning and saying, like, do it now, get him up, get him up and finish him.
Yeah, it's probably all, like, real emotion.
Yes. It probably is.
Oh, man. So that one, and then next we went to Diamond Dallas Page.
Yep, April.
Not Goldberg. I'm sorry. Wait, Sting.
Yes.
Oh, geez.
This is our first appearance of Crow Sting.
Crow Sting?
Yeah, it's actually kind of even past Crow Sting where he's just, he still has the black and white face paint, but for a while he was like the Crow from the movie.
Oh, okay.
And he kind of evolved from there. Now he's kind of more
back to Sting.
Back to Sting's thing, but still kind of used that face paint, which really he would use for the rest
of his career.
When
did he grow out his blonde flat top?
That was like late 95 into 96.
Because I feel like, I mean, it was like one style, then it was like the next. There was no like transition.
Yeah, there, I mean, there was like early 96, it was kind of like dirty, blonde growing into brown. Like, it was kind of like growing out. By like mid 96, it was just the normal.
Yeah.
But now normal.
Decided he
didn't want brown hair.
Don't want to keep it up.
No.
It was a very like. Look, this
it was a very, time. Yeah, very early 90s look.
Right. It certainly reminds me of like Mr. Freeze.
Yes.
So.
Captain Planet.
Yeah.
Also a Turner entity.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, was that, what network was that on?
TBS.
That sounds right.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, I think when we were a kid, you just kind of watched what was on.
You didn't really get a lot of choice. Search for it. Yeah, you had like 20 cable channels.
You either watched or you did, or like you didn't watch TV.
Right.
So, this one I thought was okay too. Well, actually, it got better near the end.
Yeah, I think this one was. It was kind
of
like.
A lot of crotch shots. No moves off the ropes. It's just kind of a brawl.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what you're going to see with these two guys, though. They're not like super high flyers, but.
I a little bit of high flying.
Yeah, I know. That's why I gave you your Lucha Libre action. But yeah, I especially like. The sequence where Sting goes for a tombstone.
Yeah.
DDP reverses it and then Sting reverses it.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, DDP goes for the diamond cutter and Sting hooks the ropes and then hits his reverse DDT.
Right.
The scorpion death drop.
Oh. Well,
for the win.
There's only like so many different finishers.
Yeah.
They all have like slightly different names.
Yeah. But it was a good one for him. Because he had the scorpion death lock. The sharpshooter, but he needed like a move that he could do quick and
right,
especially like when he was fighting 20 guys in the NWO, he can't just stop and lock every one of them into a submission move.
Yeah, that's a good point. You need like a submission one and like a quick hit,
right? That became his quick hit
one. Your stone cold stunner,
yeah, exactly. You could hit that on guys all night long,
right? Oh, yeah, I've seen it. Sting wins this one,
right. And then in our final one, we go to the very last Nitro at the Boardwalk Beach Resort in Panama City.
So 1995 to 2001, so only 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's surprising that
It was that long or that short, you think?
I think that it was that short, really. I mean, I would say it's still the second, well, probably now third. I mean, I would say like Raw, SmackDown, and then Nitro are the three most biggest wrestling shows ever. I mean, it was. There was a 2.5 year period where it was the biggest show on cable, and a 4 year period it was one of the two biggest shows.
Yeah, so a respectable run. I mean, as much as I like to think it's like the chaotic, like. Redheaded stepchild of the wrestling world. They
right.
Have a pretty respectable run.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's
kind
be
of
a hot mess and be successful.
Hmm?
You can be a hot mess and be successful.
Yes, yeah. WCW was very good at that. That's kind of their
brand.
That's their claim to fame, really, being a hot mess, but also every once in a while having Ric Flair and Sting go out there and have a great match.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to call this a great match.
Yeah, this was not. I mean, this was like Ric Flair in his lowest period. Like he came out and cut that promo, and there's like interviews about earlier in the day, like WWF officials showed up, like Shane McMahon was there. He actually ends up getting involved in the final interview.
Oh, okay.
And becomes a storyline owner of WCW to start that cross promotional feud. But he shows up and like in an actual managerial role, like him and Bruce Pritchard and I think one or two other guys like showed up and they were like literally in charge and like they said they went to Ric Flair and Sting and were like, we want you guys to have the last match in Nitro history. And Ric Flair was like, I don't have my gear. Because at this time, Ric Flair had been off air for a while.
Gotcha.
And he didn't feel like confident in himself. He had been wrestling in a t-shirt for the last couple of months because he didn't like that he had big saggy boobies.
Yeah, that was weird seeing him wrestle in a t-shirt.
Yeah, just a random Nitro t-shirt.
Yeah.
So they sent someone to Charlotte to get his gear and bring it down.
Wow. Huh?
So they kind of like forced his hand and were like,
yeah, it's like, oh, no, you're going to wrestle. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
And then, I mean, it's a very like baseline, even like below baseline, really.
Right. Sting it's Flair. More sentimental.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's just more, these two guys are going to have their final farewell match. And this is the end of WCW.
Yeah.
And they have a... it's a nice send off, you know. Sting wins clean, no shenanigans, and then they hug.
Right. On the show. Yeah, because it's definitely more like an exhibition match. It's not like there's any stakes involved. Or any
I mean, it's kind of just it's there for historical significance because it is literally the last WCW match ever.
So we watched the first one and the last one.
Yeah, the first Nitro match and the last.
I've seen that was by design. You did.
It was, and I gotta say, like the first 8 or 9 years after Nitro ended, I always thought that Ric Flair Sting from the first Nitro was actually the first match. And I thought they bookended it like completely.
Exactly the match.
But they ended up not doing that. But I mean, I don't think in 1995 they were thinking, well, we're gonna go bankrupt in 6 years. We're gonna get canceled.
Did they go bankrupt?
Well, they.
Oh yeah. They, Turner doesn't go bankrupt.
Turner merged with AOL.
Oh yeah.
So there, and it was like one of the worst business deals of all time.
Yep.
And the guy they put in charge of TNT didn't want wrestling anymore. And WCW had been trying to be sold for a while, and they actually had a deal with an Eric Bischoff led group, like in January. But then in March, and the deal always was contingent that Nitro would still have its time slot on TNT, and then in late March, Jamie Kellner was the new head of TNT, and he said, we're not having wrestling anymore. Even though it was still their highest rated show.
Well,
he thought it wasn't prestigious enough for their audience.
For movies and their NBA basketball playoffs? Okay.
You know, you need more Rizzoli and Isles. Or Franklin and Bash.
Well, Franklin and Bash is way after this.
Yeah, I know.
There's more Rizzoli and Isles territory.
Yeah, I'm just...
I got you, though.
You know, like, saying it's...
Once the programming
is. But so then, anyway, so once the programming was off the table, it was kind of useless to any company other than the WWE who could take it, use the tape library, and sell. And he bought it for $2.5 million.
That's it?
Yeah. And like.
Oh my gosh.
And like in 2003, they sold a Ric Flair DVD with, I mean, it's like 9 out of 10 of the matches are WCW. And made like probably $10 million off of that alone. So, and then, I mean,
that's the amount of deep discount. Jeez. Yeah.
The amount of DVDs they sold and like
everything.
Now it's a, you know, it's a big part of the network. Yeah. It was quite the steal, and that's why they did it. And also, I mean, we didn't watch the promo, but the promo that comes at the very end of Nitro was simulcast on Raw and Nitro. And it's basically Vince McMahon throwing his dick out of the table and being like, I bought my competition. People say, how do you beat a billionaire? You become one yourself. But that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
About Vince McMahon and his So
his dealings.
Looking at these matches.
Yeah, so do we have to do like the 30-second ones?
No, I would say
I'm not gonna do the Parker versus Randy Savage one.
Here, I'll highlight the ones that you should.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna take the Parker versus DDP. No, not Randy Savage versus DDP as La Parka. I'm taking that one out.
And I, yeah, so yeah, I, and I'll the, take out
the Parka Goldberg one.
And even the Ric Flair Sting, I don't think can really be properly
rated
against the other one. Like, it's kind of, it's lower, but.
Yeah, I think it might be sentimental.
It might be sentimentally. It might be 100 at my list, I think.
Just
because.
The last. Are you guys doing that of 100 out of like 500?
100.
100. Okay, so I'm going to take the Ric Flair Sting one. Okay.
So out of the 7 that we will look at.
Okay. The last 2 are definitely near the bottom for me.
Okay.
Let me just put those at 7 and 6 for now. Actually, yeah, I think the Hulk Hogan Goldberg one. I don't know, because I also thought, the MGM one was a good matchup until like it changed
right.
tone completely. So, I guess I'm gonna do the DDP versus. Sting. Sorry, I'm being all like indecisive here. I'm gonna put the Raven one. I didn't really care for just because I don't like that guy.
that's something a lot of people actually share.
So I'm gonna say 7 is Raven versus Goldberg.
Okay.
6 is Hogan versus Goldberg.
Okay.
So it wasn't a good match, and then all the people show up and it gets chaotic.
Right.
5 is DDP versus Sting.
Okay.
It's just like not my style.
Yeah, I could get there.
And then 4, I'm going to say the 6-man tag at MGM, like I said, just because it was a little bit of a chaotic mess.
Yeah.
Like they all do. Number 3, this is next in the... I should have probably thought I would. 3, Ric Flair versus Eddie Guerrero.
Okay.
At Nitro. And then 13-3. I think I'm with the Luchador one first.
All right. And then the Pillman Liger second.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Definitely different than mine.
Well, yeah. I'm curious.
Well, for, I guess, Hogan Goldberg, I'm kind of looking at it in the... not in the same
thing, but things.
Kind of the context of like Hogan Andre.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I gotta give it a bump.
It's seminal, but
like,
it's
gotta
match.
Be. I think for me, I don't know exactly where it would be, but I would say like baseline when I'm actually making the list is gonna start like at 50.
Okay, have you started your list?
Not really.
Just
I'm still just kind
form.
Of compiling
data,
like watching all the matches, compiling the data.
Gotcha.
But I think like
data exploration.
I think I'll just put it like at 50, let's say, to start, like, because it's it, and then also the beginning of the NWO. I think are going to be like right after each other, just because of the historical significance of them.
You keep saying historical significance.
It's, I mean, in the context of this company, it
is
true, big.
That's true.
It's got to be factored in, I think. And then Sting versus DDP, I gave it quite a bump because April of 99, WCW sucked.
Okay.
So I actually have that.
But you have more, like I said, you kind of look at
different. Yeah, I have that actually the
4th
highest.
You didn't tell me your South Park story. You said we had a South Park
story.
Oh,
yes. So,
sorry to
so there, and no, that's a good interruption. So during the DDP Sting match, there's someone holding a Sting South Park thing. And you have no idea how big it was on the internet in 1999 for idiots to make a GeoCities website with every wrestler as a South Park character.
Oh.
The general thing was, like, most of them were just standard Kyles, like just
right.
the standard model.
With like a wrestling onesie on?
Yeah.
Or singlet on?
Masked guys painted face guys like Sting were always a Kenny.
Oh, yeah, makes sense.
And then for the most part, like, the big guys, like, the main eventers were always Cartman, because in 1990, Cartman was, like, the biggest, the most popular guy. Like, I remember Steve Austin had a shirt that said SCU, Stone Cold University. And there was, I remember specifically a Cartman with the FAU, Fat Ass University shirt. Like, people just, like, make these
images. Did you have one?
I didn't have them, but. So I had a friend at St. Bede's.
Who?
Nick DiMaggio.
Okay.
Who would pay me $2 every week for Raw results, because Raw was taped every other week. I never told him. I get this from, like, any wrestling website. I mean, I had AOL internet. It wasn't like I had some super high speed.
Wait, he would pay you?
Yeah. For, like, two pages of what was going to happen on Raw the next week. Because I think he had some idiot friend that didn't go to our school that he would, like, bet for matches and win more money. But
gotcha.
I didn't
care. Ask for a cut of that.
So then, though, he was like, hey, we should, like, sell other things to other people at school. So the one time, some kid offered me $10 for all the South Park. So I sent, I printed out, like, this 20-page thing with, like, 100 different wrestlers looking like South Park characters that was from some website.
I love how you're getting paid to print stuff off the internet.
Yeah, and it was, like, yeah, and like I said, it wasn't like I had, I was going to, like, the dark web for this stuff. I, like, searched one thing into Ask Jeeves, and it popped up. But yeah, so I had a little empire for.
You've always had a little of wrestling related.
Yeah, I always had little flames in the fire.
Little irons in the
fire. Never too much money, but just enough.
Just
enough to go to. I mean, even at the time, it was to go to Toys R Us and buy more wrestling figures.
Hey, some things never change.
Exactly.
Not Toys R Us though.
Unfortunately,
that part changed. Well,
R.I.P. Jeffrey.
I never liked how I spelled his name.
Well, he was a giraffe.
Yeah, but I don't like Geoffrey.
Well, he's a giraffe. He's got a spell with a G.
No offense to people who have their name spelled that way, but.
Or giraffes.
Or
all you giraffe listening fans on Place to Be Nation.
Yes, I apologize.
So,
sorry to go back to your.
Yeah, so I had. So, a Hollywood Hogan versus Goldberg. I'm kind of. I'm going to abstain it from my vote, actually.
Oh.
I'm going to abstain it because it's. I'm not grading it on the same criteria as the others.
Gotcha. It's in the special category.
DDP versus Sting, I'm going to put 3.
Huh.
I would put Goldberg Raven, I'd put lowest. Just, it's good, but it's kind of like the low end Hogan Goldberg match.
Yeah.
The low end of it. But it was good for establishing Goldberg, making him a guy.
Mm-hmm.
I would put, let's see, from the bottom up. I'd put Mysterio, Hoovy, Psychosis, La Parca, 2. And then I'm going to put Eddie Flair, 1.
Oh, wow.
I really like that. Like, I watched that a couple weeks ago. I thought it was from later than when it was. But when it was, I was like, because it was one of those things where I was just watching Nitro thinking, oh, this is a nice, probably a good 9-minute match, and I was like waking up, like sitting up watching it, and it really got me into it. So yeah, so I'll give it that, and then Liger Pillman, 4, and then the 6-man, 5, but that's almost again kind of like abstained from the vote because of all the stuff afterwards. And
it was more established and more its place in the storyline than the actual match.
Right. So. This is it for this episode, but as we head into October,
I'm excited. Halloween.
We're going
magic.
To get spooky. Oh. That's my wife. She's making cookies.
Oh, yes.
Yes. The great Halloween Havoc.
We're watching that, right?
Oh, yes. We're going to watch. I have a couple matches from that are treats and a couple of trick matches.
Oh, so I think
we'll split it up a little bit, have a two-part episode.
Okay, the tricks and the treats.
The tricks and treats, yes. Because WCW was... That's one thing that I always respect about WCW. They didn't mind making things ridiculous sometimes. And, like, sticking to it. Like, WWE would never do a Chamber of Horrors electric chair match. Which WCW did, and we will watch that.
Okay. Yeah, WCW was not afraid to, like, look stupid.
No, because they did it by themselves sometimes also.
unintentionally.
Yes, they did it unintentionally more than enough, so every once in a while they just gave it to us.
Yeah. That's a good lesson for us all.
I think so, yeah.
And you saw the number one rated show for a couple of years.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was successful for a while.
It was. All right.
All right. Well, until then, until we meet at our Monster Mash in October, this is Ryan and Cindy signing off.
Bye.